Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our BYU TV studios. Dave McCann sitting in for Greg Wrubell. Welcome to Coordinator's Corner. Thanksgiving week is here. Offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick is here. And the Cougars are bowl eligible with Stanford coming up on Saturday. That's like on hockey, that'd be like a hat trick or something. This was a victory against Utah Tech you just had to have, no matter how you got it, because there are bigger things ahead.
Yeah, and I thought we took care of business and did what we were supposed to do.
What about Saturday? How do you feel? We'll talk about it a little bit later in the show, but what's the...
Going on the road against a very well-coached team. Stanford maybe hasn't had the year they had hoped, but they have a lot of good players and very well-coached team. I mean, Coach Shaw is if there's anybody that will get them ready to play, it's Coach Shaw.
Two teams, really, that haven't had the year that they'd hoped, clashing on the last Saturday of the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, we still have a chance to get our seventh win Saturday, and then... That's huge. I mean, I'm excited for this opportunity.
Let's start with some of the news of the day. Earlier, the Senior Bowl announcing on social media that junior receiver Puka Nacua has accepted an invitation to play in the Senior Bowl in January. Speculation immediately jumping that this must mean he's not returning for a senior year. But that's not the case. Puka's saying even this morning, just keeping his options open. While he makes a decision, you look at those numbers, and you told us during our pregame conversation the other day, you won't be surprised he's coming back.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I can't guarantee what he'll do either way, but I think he's wise to accept the invitation. And then after the season, we still have, two games left, then gather information from the NFL about where he's projected to go and then make a decision.
I like what you told us in our production meetings about Nacua. He can do so many different things with the ball, more so than anybody you've dealt with.
Yeah, what's different about him than anybody I've ever coached is he lines up at every skill position in the offense. He can play anywhere on the field, in the slot, outside, in the backfield. He can do more things than probably anyone I've ever coached, which says a lot about his intelligence as well as just his athletic ability.
So when you're up in the box calling these plays, how tempting is it to go to number 12 too much, and then how much do you kick yourself when you leave the stadium knowing you didn't go to him enough?
No such thing as too much. That's our rule is we don't ever want to end the game wishing we didn't, feeling like we didn't try to get him the ball enough. And if Saturday, Utah Tech was doubling him virtually every play the whole game. And so that's why you see Keanu have a big day, Cosper have a big day, and some of the other guys get a chance. But we're going to try to get the ball to Puka every game, and then it just makes the field open up for other people.
I talked to Keanu this morning as we're getting ready for game day for Saturday night, and he said that, hey, we were only open because everyone was over here with Puka.
Yeah, two of Keanu's big plays were they bracketed Puka and left Keanu singled up down the field with no safety in the post.
If he does move on to the NFL, can he make an impact right away?
That's a tough league. I think he can, but that's a tough league, and you're going against grown men, I think he'll be a successful player in that league for sure. I believe in him. And a lot of it is, what team you go to and what their needs are and all
right.
That stuff. But
Tyler Allgeier found that out.
I'm a big believer in Puka.
Yeah, indeed. All right, let's go back to Saturday. First quarter, you come out with all this stuff on the line.
Yeah.
It's cold, it's senior day, there's a bowl game to go secure, and there's no points on the board after the first 15 minutes. Are you thinking, okay, what's up?
Yeah, we sputtered a little bit there. We had a couple of things going on. One is they had a coach on their staff that knows our offense really well, knows our signals.
I think they had like five coaches on their staff that did that.
So we had to work through some signal challenges there for a bit. They seemed to have the perfect call a few too many times, and so we started changing up how we were signaling, and then I don't know if you noticed, but later in the game we went to just huddling. We stopped signaling altogether, and that's
really
we strung together I think four straight scores when we stopped huddle, or we stopped signaling, just went straight to huddle. I think we scored four consecutive times.
And that's an interesting move because Jaron is such a rhythm quarterback where you just want him to go.
We are a no huddle team. We huddle a little bit, but we played a lot better when we started huddling in this game, and all of a sudden some of their calls weren't quite as perfect. But it was good for us, though, to have to work through some issues. I mean, my experience with these FCS games is you expect a win, and you expect to win by a lot, and then there's a lot of, pressing in the game. Why aren't we ahead by more already? And then you just work your way through the game, and when the game's over, you won by a lot, and you did what you're supposed to do.
BYU 17-0 now against these FCS programs. Let's look into the second quarter a little bit. It's a much different story. Mismatches all over the secondary. You mentioned Puka's getting double-teamed, and then Keanu and Chase Roberts all having big plays down the field. The game just seemed to open up a little bit on offense.
Yeah, that's true. I thought Keanu, he made some great catches. I mean, the post corner route he caught was a great catch. This ball where he kept both feet in bounds.
That's the catch of the day, really, isn't it?
Great catch. This one, I thought, this catch right here on the post corner route was unbelievable. And he played a really solid game. And then it was nice to get Chase going. We threw a deep post to Chase that was, you know, right in stride. And Cosper got involved and had some big plays. But Keanu really, really stood out.
We're going to look at that play from Roberts in just a moment. I asked Keanu, I said, did you go over to Puka and say he's not the only one that can catch one-handed touchdowns? He goes, no, I did not. Almost like I wouldn't dare do that. But you had some gifted receivers.
Yeah, and Fessy does a great job with those guys. He gets everything out of them. They're ready to play every week, and they execute our offense really well.
When you think about it over the course of the season, Baylor was Chase Roberts' night, which no one expected for a freshman and playing without Puka. Then the Wyoming game is Keanu's night.
Yeah.
Then Puka has a number of his nights.
Yeah.
Back to Saturday, it's back over to Hill's night.
Yeah, and Cody Epps had some games.
And he had some big nights, you bet.
And we're missing Cody right now, but excuse me, he had some really good games mid-season for us. He's a really good player as well.
All right, not to be forgotten in the Keanu Hill show on Saturday is that play by Chase Roberts you mentioned a moment ago. Here's a kid that scored 40 touchdowns over at American Fork High School. Now he's up to 3 as a BYU freshman. You know, it was a great catch. He's fast, but the throw was even better than all of it.
Yeah, this was quite a throw for sure. Jaren took a little bit of a hit when he threw it, and it was just an effortless throw to hit him right in stride. And Chase can run. He's a fast guy, and I was really proud of him the way he showed up Saturday.
You know, we lost him a bit during the season with a hip issue, and everybody is taking shots back there.
Yeah, he's battled through some injuries, and you know, freshman year. You know, you have some success early on, and then you deal with some injuries, and also people start to know your game a little bit, and so you gotta work through some things. And he's really come on lately, and he's one of our best players.
When you think about going to the Big 12 next year, and the schedule is going to come out here in a week, even if Puka and Gunner don't come back, you look at Epps, you look at Roberts, you look at Hill, you look at Cosper. You've got Rex, who will be back more healthy at tight end. We'll talk about him in just a few minutes. Then there's other guys like Terrence Fall. And I mean, from that, what, pool of targets for you to run an offense, you got to be feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are good players. We'd love to have everybody back. If we lose some guys, you know, that's our job to keep replacing them. And recruiting never ends. So we'll keep being aggressive to bring in more good players and then keep working with the guys we have and keep developing them. But I like that group a lot.
After a quiet first quarter, these two teams explode for 42 in the second. Everyone warms up in the stadium on a cold day with 80-yarders and 59-yarders as we look at some of that. But this Utah Tech quarterback, Victor Gabalis, he started in the Sun Bowl last year for Washington State. You knew he could throw, and he came out with a strong arm and was chucking it deep early on.
Yeah, and their best receiver is a kid we recruited that went to Washington State.
Joey Hobert, right?
Joey Hobert, yeah. We know him very well. He's a really good player, and the offensive coordinator was Washington State last year, so those two guys are running the same offense they ran at Wazoo, so they've got quite a connection.
When you're going up against Craig Stutzman, who you faced last year when he was the OC at Washington State, you faced him when he was over at Hawaii.
Correct, yeah.
And then he was the Hawaii quarterback that beat Brandon Doman in 2001 when the Cougars were 12-0. There's a guy with a lot of history. He kind of had a good idea what BYU does, it seems.
Yeah, he's been coaching against us for a long time, and he's a guy where we all know really well. He's an excellent coach.
Get some more of this from the second quarter of this shootout. We mentioned the 42 points. Back and forth, talking about Gabalis and his arm, a broken play in the secondary, and Devin Osborne's off 80 yards, and then you come right back and go, fine, I'll go 59 on the next touchdown.
Yeah, we got it going there in the second quarter. It was, you know, we sputtered a little bit early, but we were moving the ball well. We just had a couple of, you know, miscues, and then once we got it going, it felt like we took control of the game.
There's Hobert. They like to think of him a lot like BYU thinks of Puka Nacua. So they score, and then you go right back to Hill.
Yeah, that's one of the plays there where they doubled Puka and gave us a chance to throw it over their heads. And then this was a great play. This is actually a QB draw with an RPO, and they blitzed us one more guy than we can block. So Jaren has to get the ball out fast, and he made a perfect throw, and it was an excellent catch.
Blaine Fowler mentioned during our broadcast that 4-yard touchdown seems routine to the fan.
Yeah.
But that has to be a very, very good throw.
I'm glad Blaine mentioned that, because that is a play that you have to practice that a lot. I mean, we have five blockers. They're rushing six. Jaren has to angle drop away from the unblocked guy. Our old linemen pick up the right five. And then it's got to be a perfect throw and catch to be able to execute that play. It was, that's a play I was really proud of for our players.
When you look back at that first half and then you go back to the Boise State game, you have three halves where this offense feels like it's restored its identity. And it feels like you now are confident calling whatever play. As opposed to, I want to call this, but this guy's got a bad knee. I want to call this, but this can't be here. It seems like everything's back open.
Yeah, we have, just more players available to us now. And I think a big thing is just Jaren was pretty beat up there midseason for a few games, and he's throwing the ball really great right now. He's in command and just running the show out there.
Hey, plan to be with us tomorrow night for BYU football with Kalani Sitake, Stanford transfer. Houston Haemuli going to join the coach and Greg Wrubell at 8:30 Eastern time. Might be Spencer tomorrow night on the BYU TV app. Hema delivered the block that got Terrence Fall into the end zone in the fourth quarter on Saturday. He's a great interview. Should be a fun show tomorrow night. Coming up, a look at Jaren Hall's career day and the challenge he has coming this weekend at Stanford when Coordinator's Corner continues on BYU TV.
Hall back to pass. Been waiting for Puka to make some noise here so far. He's ill, making more noise. Another touchdown, you bet! 45 yards!
It was a big day for BYU TV with a football basketball doubleheader and a pair of wins. We love calling games. We love winning even more. We welcome you back to Coordinator's Corner. Offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick here with us. Six wins gets you into the postseason. Chance for seven on Saturday. But getting to a bowl game is priority number one. It's on a plaque over at the Student Athletic Building. Why is it so valuable when there are so many?
You get a chance to play that extra game. You get all those extra practices. It's almost like an extra spring ball. By the time you play the game, spring ball is 15 practices. You usually get 12 to 15 before you play the bowl. So, it depends when your bowl is, but you get a good amount of practices. So it's just a great opportunity to develop your younger players. And then it's a great chance for everyone to play another game together. I mean, in my opinion, there's no such thing as a bad bowl game. I love them.
And considering the next time we're at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, there's going to be a Big 12 stamp down on the field, and it's a whole different animal. So you have a bowl game, Stanford, a bowl game, spring practice, whatever gets done in the summer, a couple of, Sam Houston, Southern Utah, and then a gauntlet of 10 P5s starting with Arkansas.
I need to just think about
Stanford. How about that?
I need to just think about Stanford right now. You're overwhelming me.
Yeah, sorry about that.
So, yeah.
We like to be overwhelmed. Right. We're in a constant state of overwhelming, but as far as the value of practice, we'll bring it down to today's practice moving forward.
Every practice.
So critical.
Yeah, every rep, every practice is critical. It was nice to get a few of our young guys in at the end of the game Saturday and got them a few reps. But, yeah, we're all on to Stanford now.
I didn't mean to get you overwhelmed. We may need you to get some more water in here.
I'm good.
To think of those 10 P5s coming up. BYU gets into the third quarter, up 28-20. And we talked again in the production meeting, which is interesting because we meet on Friday and then the game's on Saturday. And we kind of compare what you thought you'd be able to do with what happened. And you talked about Chris Brooks was going to get the ball and he was going to get the ground game going. And then he did.
Yeah, the plan was to get Hinkley some carries in the first half and then sort of let Chris take it over, and that's what we did. And thought Chris ran really hard, and he did a good job showing some patience because his opportunity came a little later in the game.
146 yards of total offense.
Thought he ran really well.
Yeah, he ran angry.
He did. When he runs with violence and, physicality, he's a tough guy to stop.
You got to think he's going to run with some violence Saturday because as an old Cal guy, they don't like Stanford for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, he mentioned that to me Saturday, that he's excited for this game.
It'll be fun to see him back there. Jaren Hall doesn't throw many interceptions. In fact, in 707 career passing attempts, only 11 have gone to the other team. One went to the other team on Saturday with a tip ball. We're going to show it to you and have you walk us through it. So when he doesn't throw picks, we like to study him because they're a rarity.
Well, he made a good decision. The ball just got away from him a little bit. And if you notice, the guy who intercepted the ball actually luffed into it because we were running a post corner route outside. And Chase beat the guy so badly that he got turned around on the post corner and just lucked into the ball hitting him. Like, if he wouldn't have gotten beaten so badly on the post corner route, he wouldn't have even been there to intercept it.
Here's what he's seeing, and he's seeing Chase wide open.
Yeah, but Jaren made a good decision. This ball just got away from him a little bit. And, you know, if you throw the ball 40-something times, there's a chance there might be an interception, and you just got to play through it.
If you throw it 707 times,
yeah,
it seems like there's a great chance for more than 11. He's been pretty good.
He is one of the best I've ever seen at taking care of the football. I mean, he is elite at protecting the ball.
Think about it. This season, last season, BYU just didn't give the ball up. A fumble here and there. Lapini had one Saturday, but
he didn't. It's been a hallmark of our offense the last 3 years is to take care of the football. And you know, two turnovers on Saturday is more than I would like, but overall, we are a team that takes good care of the ball, and we'll continue to do that.
Let's spend some time now on Hall. He took advantage of that big offensive line, talented receiving group. Also had the FCS secondary, which helped, but he threw for a career-high 456 yards and 5 touchdowns, ran for a touchdown. So that gives him 6 on the day. That's a nice Saturday. His shoulder's healthy, and when he's healthy, as you've said many times, and we saw him healthy at Boise State again Saturday, he's an NFL-caliber quarterback, can make all the throws.
Yeah, he's a good player, and I thought, you know, you have to throw those completions. I mean, you still have to go out there and make the plays, and he did it on Saturday. And a couple of those throws he made were just really accurate down the field throws. And then when he runs the ball, it just opens up the whole game for our offense. And he's been running more lately. I've been calling more runs for him, but he's also been making more plays, just scramble plays that really open up the game.
Take a look at his numbers. And as with Puka, his future is his decision to make. But do you think, as we sit here today, that he'll be behind the center when Sam Houston's here in September?
I mean, I can't answer that for sure. I hope that he stays. But I will support him no matter what because I do think he's an NFL player. What we'll do is continue to gather information from a variety of sources. We'll turn in his paperwork to the NFL, and they give us a report on what round they think he'll go in. And then we'll sit down and talk about it. And I think that he'll make a wise decision.
This game Saturday, for everything you just said, is a very important game for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's important because it's the next game. I mean, in football, you get 12 opportunities. And every play of every game is so precious. And you cannot take one play for granted. And so this is the next game. It's a quality opponent on the road in the Pac-12. It's a great opportunity for everyone, and I can't wait. I'm really excited for it.
He's 5-1 against the Pac-12, so he's not afraid of those Pac-12 teams. Last Thanksgiving, we were at SC for the regular season finale, put together a nice game. In that game, Isaac Rex wrecks his ankle, surgery, no spring ball. You're not sure if you're going to have him. He promises you'll be back. He shows back up in camp ready to go somewhat in the fall. And let's look at some of his work from Saturday. But a note you had mentioned is that ankle's been bugging him this whole season, and he's decided to play through it rather than sit it out still finds ways to make some plays.
He's one of the toughest guys I've ever seen. He easily could have sat this year out or taken half the year off.
What happens here? I mean, the tackled injury, by the 3-yard.
And I think that's just a good example of he's not all the way back, but he's getting there, and he is to put himself out there and play the way he's played for our team this year. I have so much respect for him. Our whole program, everybody does, and he's a great receiver. He's a good blocker, great blocker. He's one of our best players as well, and one of my favorite kids I've ever coached. I love him.
19 career touchdowns.
Yeah,
he's got two years remaining.
He's a touchdown machine. I mean, because he's such a weapon. He's got such great size and range. I thought the other touchdown that they called pass interference on was questionable. He didn't push off. He just competed for the ball. He's such a big target that he's open even if he's not open.
When he comes back even healthier for next season, what does that do to the tight end spot in your offense?
Well, I think he'll take a huge step forward because he's going to have a whole offseason to get back to running, you know, the way he did before, and you know, and just another year of experience in our offense, and you know, I just think he should be one of our top targets next year, be one of our best players.
Terrence Fall, another big, wide, tall receiver in this group. Maybe more tall than wide. I should correct that. He gets the last touchdown of the day back on Saturday. We want to look at it here. You're trying to run the clock out. Utah Tech keeps calling timeouts, so you're running around the corner. But how about Houston Haemuli's block to get him into the end zone?
Yeah, we were planning on just running the ball three times and taking a knee, but then when they were calling timeouts, we decided to keep running it. So we ran this jet sweep. I wasn't going to throw a pass or anything like that. I didn't think that was the right thing to do, but yeah, we gave the jet sweep to Terrence and got some good blocks. Houston got out there and made a good block, and I think the other one was Ethan Erickson, got out there and made a block, and then Terrence did the rest.
Once that game ends, 52 points on the board, the seniors, the 13, have their moment. They do the senior walk, receive their blankets. That handful of, maybe a bigger handful of juniors that might go, also honored after the game. What are those moments like? You had one. What are those moments like now as a coordinator to go, you know what, I'm not going to see that guy anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it's emotional. You want to make sure you make a connection with each guy and let them know how much you appreciate what they've done for our program. And we still have more football to play, but it was a good opportunity to just thank those guys for everything they've done.
It's going to be warmer in Stanford.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be balmy, but it'll be warmer.
And a lot of those guys that got a blanket, I'm still hoping decide to play next year. So, but for the ones that don't have a choice to come back, man, we're going to miss them and really appreciate all that they've done.
I heard this, and I don't know if it's verified or not, but for the juniors that walked and got blankets that come back, and then they walk again, they get a second blanket. They don't have to return the blanket. So why wouldn't you do that? You get two blankets.
Might as well get a second blanket.
Let's roll out our offensive MVP from the Utah Tech game in the regular season home finale. And, well, you've been riding this guy for a long, long time, and he's been getting protected by the guy to the right, Blake Freeland.
Yeah, first, I want to mention Blake. He graded over 90% and played a really great game. He's been a great player for us his whole career, and just thought he was outstanding on Saturday. And then, of course, you know, Jaron had a good game, but he can't do it without those guys blocking for him.
That's been a monster offensive line, and while it's been documented that the running game has struggled all season for a variety of reasons, the pass protection has been solid throughout.
Yeah, and I would push back a little bit on the run game struggled all season. I think our average per carry is really good. We had a few issues in certain games. We've had some short yardage issues that have cost us, and a lot of that is, you know, I'll put that on me. I have to scheme that better and call better plays, but. Really proud of our offensive line. That's a good unit, and they've played well all year.
You can push back anytime you want. This is your show. I'm just the fill-in host.
We need to get better, but I think those guys, the offensive line in particular, has done a really good job this year.
Defensive MVP, Jacob Robinson. Again, he's building a nice season, got an interception, some big plays in the secondary.
Yeah, he's a competitor. I mean, I love the way he competes in practice. He's kind of a slight frame guy. You wouldn't think he's as tough as he is, but he is a tough competitor, physical player, and one of my favorite guys on the team.
As we go to break, we remind you that dinner after the game at JCW's includes something for everybody, from burgers to wings, shakes to salads. JCW's quality, and a lot of it in Lehigh, American Fork, Provo, South Jordan, and now open in Harriman. Lots of coverage around the BYU-Stanford game on Saturday night, including on BYU Radio. Greg, Riley, and Shep get things going at 9 Eastern from Stanford Stadium and from our Provo studios on BYU Radio. Coming up, finding a way to slice up the Cardinal, we turn our attention to Stanford when Coordinator's Corner continues on BYU TV.
Both corners playing press coverage and then bailing.
Gabalas winds up, wants another deep ball for Osborne. This one's picked off. Jacob Robinson with the interception.
Anytime an Orem Tiger makes a play like that, other Orem Tigers feel important to put that in the spotlight. So Robinson with the pick, and really kind of helps turn things a little bit. You needed to stop just to get ahead of the back and forth scoring, and then you took it from there on Saturday.
Yeah, that was a great play by Jacob, and it was an opportunity to sort of extend the lead and take control of the game.
So it is Stanford on Saturday. as you put your game plan together and you start putting it in practice today, where do you start?
Well, today we just start with our base down, first and second down run game and pass game. And then tomorrow we move on to third downs and red zone and work our way through the week.
What's their style?
They are a physical team. They like to, they're what you'd expect with Stanford. They're smart guys that do everything right. They're where they're supposed to be. They fit the runs the way they're supposed to fit. They're where they're supposed to be in coverage. I think they've had some injuries this year and they're a little bit beat up, but they're still competing really hard. And they have great length. There's no short guys on that defense. They've got length at every position.
3-9 last year, 3-8 this year. You've had to scheme against them both at Utah and here now at BYU. What's different about them? Why are they not the Stanford that we've known for decades?
I don't know if I can answer that, but I've coached against these guys enough that I have a lot of respect for them and know that they'll be ready to play Saturday. I mean, David Shaw's an awesome coach. I've known Lance Anderson a long time. Coach Lamb knows these guys even better than I do, but they're good coaches. If there's anybody that'll have their team ready, it's Coach Shaw and Lance Anderson. They're well coached.
You're back to the standard keys of protect the football, move the chains?
Absolutely. Yeah, that never changes. We got to take care of the football and get touchdowns when we're in the red zone.
Thanksgiving week is here, so let's finish here with our portion with the great Aaron Roderick. What are some of the things you're most thankful for?
Thankful for my family, of course, and I'm thankful to coach these guys. I get to, these players are, it's a joy to coach these guys. Every day I'm really enjoy working with guys that want to be great, want to do everything right, want to be coached, and it's great honor in my life to coach these guys.
How many times this week will you wake up in the middle of the night thinking, oh, I should run that play, or that play would work?
I don't sleep very much. I mean, I always...
The thoughts are constant?
Win or lose, you always have plays you second guess or, think about those more than the ones that worked.
Well, we wish you some sleep and a happy Thanksgiving and another win on Saturday. Thank you for being
here. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Aaron Roderick with us, and plan to be with us Saturday night for BYU Sports Nation Game Day at 9 Eastern, 7 Mountain on BYU TV. We'll be live from Stanford Stadium and here in our Provo studios for 2 hours of coverage, all leading up to kickoff of the regular season finale. I'll sit down with Keanu Hill as part of our coverage. The live post-game show follows the game back on BYU TV. Going to be a long day. Monitor your turkey sandwiches. Ed Lamb's coming up next here on BYU TV. Welcome back to Coordinator's Corner on BYU TV as the Cougars prepare for Saturday night's game at Stanford. Ed Lamb's the assistant head coach, special teams coordinator, and safeties coach. Should I add anything else? Any more titles?
No, please don't.
Are we good with that? We're good with
that's
that?
All I can handle.
It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanksgiving week, how is that different practice-wise and preparation-wise for a team?
Well, we squeeze Thursday's practice into the morning, which creates a little bit of a challenge because we'll have Wednesday afternoon practice and then come right back on Thursday morning. The physical turnaround for the players is doable, especially since they get kind of a longer rest after our Thursday practice going into the game. They can work with that. The mental turnaround for the coaches, especially to take that video from Wednesday's practice, flip it all around, notate it, get ready for Thursday morning's meetings. That's a little bit of a challenge, but it's one we're up for and we're used to.
So Thursday morning, and then Friday you fly down there.
Right.
So all that's left is a walkthrough at the stadium, if you even do that. A lot of teams don't even do that anymore. So is Thursday morning that the last blast of prep?
Yeah, some people say that the hay's in the barn after Thursday. We're not real fond of that because there's still a lot of work that goes on, but it's mostly mental prep after that.
And this team's got some leadership at quarterback and some veteran players that can kind of guide through. Last year was the same thing with the USC game, right?
That's right. We've done it before. We've been on the road before. And again, the team turns over every year. But 1 year to the next, just 12 months ago, we did the same thing.
So we won't see some guys that we saw Saturday ever again in uniform at Lavelle Edwards
right.
Stadium. They've been through a lot. They've been through a pandemic, some of them. But they won, 27 games. A lot of those guys went 27-9. So a lot of winners there that you said goodbye to. What was that like?
That's tough for me. And I you know, the main role there, you saw Kalani and our administration kind of going to each guy. And, and as assistant coaches, we'd like to be right there in the thick of that, but you don't want a long line of all the assistants. But
we've all been to wedding receptions that go forever.
But we all have special relationships and different ones. Some of those kids, we were in their homes when they were high school kids. They're unrecognizable 4 or 5 years, 6 years later, sometimes more with a mission. And just to see the growth that they go through and how important the game is to them. To live the ups and downs with them of a college football career and then see them move on. It's exciting and sad at the same time.
We joke about Lorenzo Falatea being here as long as the whole staff. It feels like he has been here forever.
That's right.
He had some big plays. I remember his big game against USC, but 2019. And then he dealt with injuries like so many. And to see him back out there and finishing it up.
That's right.
Inspiration stories. And then you got a lot of juniors that might not come back. Then again, most of them might come back. This is when does all that start? After Stanford, before a bowl game, when guys really have to decide what they're going to do?
Yeah, good question. Well, it used to, you wouldn't in the old days recognize juniors at all.
Right.
Things have changed so much. I mean, guys are graduating faster. Summer school is more of a thing than even in the days when I played. And then guys have, you know, just more information about whether it's coming out early or getting job opportunities, just whether or not football continues to be right for them. So that's something that we've all been getting used to. I think it's a really good idea for Kalani to recognize anyone who might be moving on and then deal with it after. And as far as the timeline, we don't impose a timeline on the players.
Yeah.
If they're good enough to come back and help us win, then we're going to be very patient with that.
24 of them. 24 right. underclassmen. Yeah. And then I think some people from the crowd came down and were also recognized. Yeah. It was a mass thing after the game. Over in your team room at the Student Athletic Building, there's a plaque on the wall of the priorities for the season. Right there at the top is become bowl eligible. Mm-hmm. And I asked Aaron about this too. That was what was really the most significant thing that came out of Saturday.
It was, yeah, no doubt about it. We want that extra opportunity for our seniors and upperclassmen, one more game. We want that extra opportunity to win. You talk about guys in their career over the last 3 years, 27. Well, how about a chance to get a 28th and a 29th victory
right.
in 3 years? That is rare company across college football for teams to be approaching 29, 30 wins in 3 years of play. So awesome opportunities that the bowl game brings about. And then for the underclassmen, the chance to get in extra practices.
How have you seen that transition? We've seen it on the field, but throughout the transition of Kalani Sitake taking a more aggressive role in the defense, calling the plays, they look better against East Carolina, look really good against Boise State, and there were some bumps on Saturday, and then they locked down, and then the game was over. What have you noticed in that transition?
Well, the thing that Kalani brings is a vision of how he wants to see it done. And then as that starts to occur, then there'll be an identity that carries through for years. And I think that's just something that he's worked towards. You know, the first half, we were really, got aggressive and failed in some areas. But I think it's important to note that we just explained to the players, hey, these things work when you do them right. And in the second half, yeah, it was much more lockdown defense at that point. And I think forced 7, maybe 8 punts in a row and a bunch of maybe 6 3 and outs in there, as I recall. So some excellent play in the second half, really shored things up, and a lot of great individual and team efforts.
There's a direct link, isn't there, between a defense that's stressed out as opposed to a defense that's laughing and having a good time?
There is. The college football is a game of momentum. There's the seasonal momentum, season-to-season momentum, week-to-week momentum, and this team has dealt with so many challenges and voices and a resetting of goals. You know, I think at one time in the off season it was like, we've got to beat Baylor, and that's all that matters. And then
because that was the true test after last season.
They're
the only P5 that you didn't beat.
Yeah.
And so then here they come, and I remember that, and they're ranked number 9 in the country, and South Florida was just like, okay, let's not mess up against South Florida because the really game. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when it's all in September, there's not a lot left after that.
That's right, yeah. And on us, you know, as I start with coach, anytime it's kind of an identity or a player issue for motivation and it doesn't transcend onto the field in a winning way, then, you know, as coaches, we've got to figure out, well, how have we could have delivered the message better? How could we have had a more consistent message that would transcend through the length of the season? And so at this point, some of that is gone and past, and it's important to learn from it but not dwell on it. And we've got to finish strong. And right now, you know, a couple of game winning streak, it feels pretty good compared to where we were 4 or 5 weeks ago.
This second quarter on Saturday reminded us of the old WAC days, which was interesting because Utah Tech's now in the WAC. And back and forth, there were touchdown passes of 30, 80, 59, and 45 yards. Let's look at some of the highlights. And you're a head coach at Southern Utah. The opportunity for smaller schools to come in an environment like this, it is their Super Bowl, and sometimes they play like superhuman for a while.
Well, yeah, and number one, give these guys credit on offense. Maybe we're not the most difficult offenses we've faced all year, the most talented, but that is an FBS offense. They've proven that all year long. As a team, they don't have a lot of wins, but that's one of the best FCS offenses in the country. And when you talk about being one of the best FCS teams, you're talking about being FBS caliber. They played really well. I give them credit first. When our guys did the right thing and played hard, we significantly shored up on defense. But make no question, an FCS coaching staff and an FCS team, that is a 12-month motivation for their single FBS game. They can't wait to do that. They put all the work into it.
You mentioned a couple of mistakes there. Utah Tech really made like four giant plays in the game. Three of them led to 17 of their 20 points. Then you made some adjustments at halftime. They scored six points in the second half. Fixable plays as opposed to we can't stop that kind of plays.
That's right, absolutely. And, to the chagrin of the team, because all of those plays that they got were on our more aggressive defenses. We were really trying to bring a lot of pressure in the first half and establish some sacks. And havoc rate is something that we talk about as a defense. And our players want to do that too. You know, we all love sacks. I was a defensive end. There's nothing like a sack for the stadium, the fans, the defense. It's an exciting thing. And in the first half, we really chased that and weren't able to get it. It doesn't mean that those were the wrong things to do. But moving forward, we just need to continue to teach and challenge and get better at the ability to generate negative plays.
So when you're out there on the field in the 96 Cotton Bowl, you're looking for a sack.
Oh, yeah, I was always looking. I did not get one. I came close. I think I went over the top of somebody else's sack. That's about as close as I got.
Jacob Robinson's putting together a nice season. He had a nice interception. We saw it earlier. We'll take a look at it again and some pass breakups. What do you like in his development?
Oh, Jacob, he's such a smart player, the development is a key for him, like, moving forward. He's gained some weight and some strength. He's got a ways to go in that area, which I think is a sign of his potential. But he's such a smooth, intelligent player. He plays multiple positions for us. He started at safety. He started at nickel. He started at dime. He started at corner. He's that great play right there. And he made timely plays from the very first play of the game right through to the end. He was a stalwart for us.
It's been interesting to watch some of these guys because I wrote an article the other day. The defense that took the field against Baylor was completely different, especially in the secondary, from the defense that took the field against East Carolina, Boise State, personnel-wise. So when you switch out your five DBs for five other ones because of injury, that's the kind of season that's been back there, keeping guys healthy and some bond performance, but for the most part, it's been a shuffle.
Yeah, it's not unusual to have to shuffle guys on defense or on offense for that matter. It's fairly unusual to have that many injuries in the secondary. It's a little bit more of a skill position, and we've had Buzzard's luck in on the offensive skill positions and the defensive skill positions this year with staying healthy.
I saw 20 players have missed time on the defensive side of the ball from injury this year. You only get to play 11 at one moment, and you got 20 that have missed time because you can't use them.
Yeah, it's an interesting number. We don't keep track of it. It's something that's out of our control as far as by the time it gets to my level. I think it's something that Kalani and our sports scientists and strength and conditioning coaches really look at closely. And by the time it gets to our level, it's like, hey, don't look at that. That's excuse language.
Show me who I got.
Yeah, who's next? Let's give another player an opportunity.
Hey, plan to be with us Tuesday night for After Further Review. Blaine Fowler, David Nixon, and I'll break down Senior Day, and we'll spend some time previewing Saturday's showdown at Stanford. Watch us at 7 Eastern, 5 Mountain on the free BYU TV app. Coming up, Ben Bywater making some plays as the Cougar defense stiffens up in the second half.
Oldroyd right between the hashes from 32 straight away. Kick on its way and through for three. BYU 45 and Utah Tech 20.
Back to routine. Jake Oldroyd has had a roller coaster kind of season, kicking field goals for BYU. Settled back down the last three games, 3 for 3. Confidence restored. I think everyone had confidence. It was Jake's confidence restored in himself, he'll go down as one of the best kickers in BYU history.
He should, and certainly one of the most talented. And this is something that he'll carry with him. It's not something we design, but when difficulty and adversity happens, overcoming that at this age in a young man's life, he'll be able to carry that story with him forward. And I really think he has turned the corner, and we got a high level of confidence right now.
Paint a picture of what it's like when you're his coach, and he's out there struggling, and you know his potential. You also know he's made 16 in a row.
Right.
But he's missing kicks that you've got to get.
Right.
He comes back off the side onto the sideline. You got to coach him.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Well, there's a real balance there, right? Because it's like a swing coach in golf. I mean, nobody golfs better than Tony Finau or whoever those pros are. But they still have a coach, and so as that coach, you're trying to point out inconsistencies. You're trying to be positive. You're trying to play some part psychologist, and that's what I went to graduate school for. So I know that the first part of being a great counselor is just to listen. And show belief in them. And, obviously, from a coaching perspective, like I fail if we miss one kick. And if we miss two in a row, I fail even worse. But that's not really how I think of it. How I'm thinking of it is, okay, the next kick. How do we get this guy to make the next kick? And then the total picture of seeing him, move into this part where he's actually doing well, that's really satisfying.
Speaking of kicking, six straight punts for Utah Tech in the second half. What adjustments did you guys discuss at halftime to just take over the game?
Well, this is going to be much to the chagrin of everybody that wants to hear that we brought a lot of pressure. We actually just went into a drop eight mode in the whole second half, and they averaged 3 yards per play.
And it worked because your three guys, the three down linemen, started to get pressure, right?
Right.
And when you get pressure, the eight-man drops, genius.
I know, it's one of those. So one thing that I think everybody just knows inherently when you hear it, I mean, the pressure always works with the coverage. If the coverage is not holding up, then it doesn't matter whether you're bringing eight on the pass rush. If the pressure doesn't hold up, they're going to get it out more quickly if the coverage doesn't hold up, excuse me. And so it's just finding that right mechanic, and we didn't want to do that as a staff, and that's the whole idea, I think, of Kalani coming in and calling the game is to get more aggressive and to have some belief in that and be courageous with it. And it just was the thing that worked in that game. And not what we set out to do other than get stops, but stops feel great.
We see it all the time when the Kansas City Chiefs are on the field.
Yeah.
The pros are dropping eight.
Yeah.
If they can get pressure with three on Mahomes, they can win that game.
Yeah.
If they can't, they're going to get beat either way.
Yeah.
But the drop eight has worked. The drop eight has worked in a number of games. fans don't like it. I don't know if they understand it.
You can sense my discomfort.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal. Like, when we're winning, everything I say sounds pretty dang smart. This season has been a challenge.
Yeah.
And it's been difficult. And my fingerprints are all over what we do in all three phases. And so basically anything that I say is going to sound pretty dumb, But,
that's not true. And Stanford doesn't do the spread and shred, which this Washington State offensive coordinator likes to do and tried to do back on Saturday. They're a different kind of a team to defend against. We're going to talk about that coming up. As we continue, it's a showdown unlike any other. Wait a sec. What did you say, Harrison? Oh, before we do that, let's do the special teams player of the game.
Yep. Oh, great. Great. A huge play. I want to start with Hobbs Nyberg, who had a couple of nice punt returns and then one really big kickoff return. We're losing at the end of the second quarter, looking at going into halftime, maybe down a touchdown, and he rips off a kickoff return. He and the kickoff return team rip a kickoff return out to midfield.
42 yards,
score.
Right?
Yeah. That was a scary moment right there, and I thought that the kickoff return team really responded well. So it gave him the player of the game to continue to believe in himself. He was disappointed in an earlier kickoff return that he chose to catch and didn't get much yardage on. Hinkley Ropati recovered the onside kick attempt at the end of the game, which is a big play for the whole team, for the defense not to have to go back out there. He also dealt with kind of some minor fatigue injuries throughout the game. And then I think the top rock was George Udoh, who had a tremendous game on kickoff coverage.
George Udoh's built like Mr. Universe.
Yeah, yeah. George Udoh is the players call him a freak. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about 40 time, your squat, bench, any type of tangible assessment of athleticism, he's at the top of the charts.
Coming up, a showdown unlike any other, matching two P5 level Latter-day Saint missionary quarterbacks on national television for the first time. We'll look ahead to Saturday when Coordinator's Corner continues on BYU TV.
Coordinator's Corner on BYU TV is brought to you by JCW's, The Burger Boys, Built Bar, Fuel the Journey, and by Siegfried and Jensen, helping Utah families for over 30 years.
Pleasure to be hanging out with Ed Lamb here on Coordinator's Corner. Stanford on Saturday. You got Tanner McKee, the Cardinal quarterback, and Jaron Hall, the BYU quarterback, both return missionaries with a lot in common, and for the first time at this level, on national TV trying to beat each other. Yeah. That's must-see TV right there.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I can't speak personally to serving a mission, as you know, but...
But you've sent many out, and you've seen them come back.
Right. And I think for a while there might have been a narrative that return missionaries can't play quarterback.
Right.
There wasn't one here for a long time. So Jaron's breaking that mold. Tanner's breaking that mold. Two really good ones. And guys I've seen growing up, I played with both of their fathers, Tanner's dad at Rick's and Jaron's dad here at BYU. So... A great story and a great couple of young men.
All right, defensively, how do you beat McKee on Saturday?
Well, we've got to be able to get that right blend of coverage and pass rush. And they're not a one-dimensional team. We've got to stop Tanner. We've got to stop their receivers. We've got to stop their offensive lines, physical, and opens up holes. They've had some running back challenges. And so we've got some new guys rotating in there. We need to be ready for whatever they give us.
Cardinals lost four straight. They're 3-8. They went 3-9 last year, so they'll look for a big finish at home on Saturday. There's going to be a sea of BYU fans there. We anticipate BYU out actually numbering Stanford fans in their own stadium on Saturday. Just kind of how it's been down there, and BYU fans in Northern California. There's, I don't know how many millions of them or so it'll feel, but you'll be well received when you come out onto the field.
That's a great
on
thing.
Saturday.
We're not entirely not used to that. You know, there's
right.
a lot of good fan travel on the road for BYU.
Thanksgiving week, what are you most thankful for?
Oh, yeah. You know, life and health, so I can do the things I love to do, be with my family, coach these players, and finish out a season strong. The daily gratitude of realizing that not everybody has life and health.
We got to know your story and your family a little bit in the newspaper and with Deep Blue.
Yeah.
It's freezing cold outside. Are you still riding with King Edward?
We are, yeah. Yeah, we rode yesterday. It was pretty good in the sun, and then a couple of those canyons we were in got a little windy and shady, and it was a little chilly, but he loves every minute of it.
That's great. Considering the season that's been, to end with a P5 opponent on the road on TV Saturday night, Thanksgiving weekend, be pumped for it?
Absolutely, yeah. So excited. From the moment last game ended, it's all moving forward, and super excited about this opportunity against a team that they may be struggling win-loss, but they make no mistake, it's a good team. They've got a win over Notre Dame. Our players know all about how tough they are, and it'll be a good challenge for us.
Ed Lamb, good to have you here. That's our show this week. Thank you for watching. We'll see you tomorrow and after further review. And Saturday night on game day, from all of us at BYU TV Sports, I'm Dave McCann. We wish you a very happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for watching.